Warning, 30 Screams or Less may contain spoilers about movies that have recently been released. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back, and enjoy the show. Or, if you don't want to waste your time watching the movie and rather have two random horror dudes watch it for you, we got you covered as well. Welcome everyone to 30 Screams or Less, a horror movie podcast where we review horror movies in 30 minutes or less. Today we have something special for you. You might have seen him in such movies as The Greasy Strangler and The TV Dead, Michael St. Michael's, all right, Corey, true horror story. Looked in the mirror this morning, my beard, an absolute nightmare. Dry, wild, looked like it clawed its way out of a crypt.
That's terrifying, man. Did you hit it with that beard octane?
Oh yeah. Beard wash, conditioner, beard oil brought it back from the dead.
Fellas, don't let your beard turn into a creature feature. Keep it alive and kicking with Beard Octane.
And right now, hit beardoctane.com, use code 30screams10, get 10% off. Save some cash and save your beard from becoming a horror show.
Bad beard day? We've had plenty. Beard Octane's the fix. We swear by it.
Michael, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to speak with us. How are you today?
I'm debatable.
Debatable.
Yeah, you know, I got up today. I don't know why. Otherwise, I probably would have just stayed in bed, waiting for my next job to come around.
Well, I mean, you got some stuff coming up, but we'll talk all about that, obviously. We want to hear what you have coming up in the pipeline. That way you can let everyone know, like, what you're up to next, you know, promote what you got going on.
Well, let's see. There's the Once in Future Smash or Smash Mouth 2, which I'm in with Will Wheaton. It's kind of a mockumentary. And then there's a thing called Shitstorm. I'm not going to say anything more about that.
All right.
Death Toilet 6, I'm in that. There's the one called Cult of Blood. Cult of Blood.
Cult of Blood.
I'm in that. And then I'm starring or co-starring with Patty Mullen in one called Strange Toy.
Oh, nice.
Should be out momentarily.
So you got a lot going on. You're a busy one.
Yes and no. I would like to be busier because I'm a set junkie. And
really,
being a set junkie, you need to be on a set. It's like, I liked the Army when I was in it, although I didn't volunteer, but just that feeling of everybody pulling together to get something done. And the movies is the closest thing I found to that since then. And I prefer it, actually, because fewer people die.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. I would hope way less people die in movies. Obviously, I would hope way less people die in war, too. But,
it's true. Fewer people do die doing this than doing the military thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Michael, we got some questions for you, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind.
All right. Corey, I know you're super pumped to talk to Michael today, and you've got some questions. I'm going to let you start. So go for it, bud.
Yeah, so the first thing I'd like to know is what your first reaction was when you read the script for The Greasy Strangler the first time.
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't really read the script. I got the part, and we were shooting in 2 days, so I was just finding, you know, my character's lines and trying to learn them and really not paying much attention to the background to it or the backstory or anything else. And I was totally taken aback when I was told I was going to be Jody, because they told me as we wrapped that tomorrow we're shooting Jody. And I said, oh. Yeah. Well, that was a good night. And it turned out to be my favorite part of the whole movie, because it brings back the most horrendous memories. I mean, on every take, something fell off. The teeth, the mustache, the fingernails. You know, it just, we couldn't get a take of something. I was surprised they actually did something with that scene.
Oh, man, it was a great scene.
That scene was so bonkers because, yeah, you were playing like a cop and you were coming by to investigate the Greasy Strangler. And I'm surprised that, like, they were just like, oh, yeah, come in. You don't look anything like Ronnie.
Yes, it's Greece.
Yes. I remember just, like, on the, and you're rubbing it on your face. I'm just like, this movie's fucking zany. It is. It's such a like crazy movie. I got a lot of, I don't know if you ever heard of Tim and Eric. Have you ever heard of Tim and Eric?
It sounds familiar.
Okay. So it was like a TV show on, I think it was Cartoon Network, and it was like played late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm watching this, I'm like, wow, this has a lot of resemblance to Tim and Eric.
I don't have cable, so I don't get the Cartoon Network, but I played Fern in Clarence, and then I did Tropical Cocktails. I did 3 episodes of that, which is on Midnight Swim for part of it. And
Adult Swim?
Yeah.
Oh, nice, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we shot that in the Dominican Republic, which is a fun thing to do. So, where are you guys at?
I'm based out of Nashville, New Hampshire. Corey's based out of Manchester, New Hampshire. But, so we don't even do this in person. This is all remote. But we like to think we do pretty good with how it sounds. I don't know if you took a listen to us prior to this interview. So, I got a question for you then. So, this kind of goes into acting. Many people feel it's too late to start something new later in life, especially a career like acting. When you appeared on Different Strokes, I believe you were nearly 40 years old at the time, which is, were you around 40?
Yeah, I was in it briefly as a baby. In Mexico, I was the ivory baby. They had me in a bathtub with this little girl that was filled with milk. And this guy, Manuel Alvarez Bravo, shot it. And we were the ivory babies.
The ivory babies?
Probably 1945 or 1946. And in...
So that's when you got your acting going, when you were a baby.
Yeah. And then in Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, there's a hippie scene in the woods. And I'm one of the hippies. They did this thing on the radio that said, hey, anybody want to be in a movie? Come on down. And I thought, oh, what the fuck? We're not doing anything. So we went there and hung out, got Poison Oak and...
Commit to the bit.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, that's what we say here on the podcast, commit to the bit. And that's what you did. It's like, so an extra. So I didn't know that because I was going through like your filmography and I didn't see anything like that. And I've seen Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. So I've done messed up and didn't even realize that you were in that. So my apologies. So you've been doing this a lot longer then, as opposed to like just starting with like Different Strokes, because that's what I was seeing going that far back.
Oh, I used to do PSAs. I was a child molester PSA. Chasing a little boy around the parking lot in with a candy bar in my hand. That was lovely. They could have at least given me a little girl to chase.
Yeah, why a boy?
And in Light Glass, that was the last thing, that the movie starring Eric Estrada, that was the last I did as Michael Peter Rappaport, because at that point, that got me my SAG card. But as soon as I got my SAG card, the other Michael Rappaport objected to there being two Michael Rappaports and thing. And I argued.
The comedian?
I said, can I be M. Peter Rappaport or M. P. Rappaport or, you know, and we don't even spell our names the same, but they made me change. And I got really depressed because I'd done a few Michael Peter Rappaport movies. And well, that's gone. And it is all gone. Then I met Mary St. Mary from the Sea Hags. They were a punk band in the late 70s, early 80s in San Francisco. And that was my inspiration.
Oh, so like you liked her name. You're like, you know what? I can do Michael St. Michael.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I'm related to a lot of churches in Eastern Europe.
Which is going to bring me to my next question. Because I've been reading some stuff and you seem like an interesting one. I got to fact check this with you. So I did some research and reading some interesting things about you. In the 1970s, were you a jet-setting hairdresser traveling like all over Europe with the world's elite?
I got to do a little bit of that, yeah. I was really foolish, so I squandered all my money on drugs.
That'll happen.
I was rated in the top 10% internationally as a hair cutter.
Really? That's wild.
Yeah, well, that's what I was doing at the time. And I got really into it. And I got very lucky. I got to work with some incredibly good people. Like, I can't really bad with names. That's why I had such a meteoric career in the movies. Because I can never remember anybody's name.
Michael, you've done more in movies than we have.
Well, I'm older than you. And I couldn't hold...
Fair.
So, you know.
Yeah, because I was going to say, that's a stark difference from acting, you know, just jet setting and doing haircuts and things like that. Was it always your dream to be an actor?
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a movie star. Okay. I think every kid does. You know, you want to be a... I didn't really want to be a fireman or a policeman, a doctor. I should have been a lawyer because I found out when I gave up being a criminal, and I gave that up when I found out that crime only paid if you were a lawyer.
It's true.
You're not wrong there.
And I, so, you know, and I was having trouble sending my own kids to college, let alone paying for theirs.
Right. And, you know, it's funny. Actually, I wanted to be a garbage man when I was a child.
Yeah?
Because I wanted to ride on the back of garbage trucks.
Ah.
That's the only reason. Other than that, rock star.
Ah, cool.
But, yeah. So I guess those are my two dreams. Both of them have nothing to do with each other. I couldn't even imagine being a rock star riding a, like, garbage truck. Could happen. I could be the first, but...
I used to be a singer. I love that.
Yeah, I was reading that, too. So did you put out any music as, like, with your singing?
Not really. You can find me in some music videos. There's two by the Old Man Rap Syndicate, based on the Greasy Strangler. There's Cult of Blood, which is on the charts in Russia, or was for a while anyway. You can see me in that. And Phil Anselmo from Pantera. He was Phil Anselmo and the Illegals. I did one for them where I play Nurse Ratched in a kind of takeoff on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That was a music video?
But when I was singing, it was like, you know, little bar bands and shit where we made $10 a night. And I felt like I was a lucky one because I didn't have to carry instruments. I really felt sorry for the drummer in and out of.
That's always the case. So I'm in a band, and I'm the vocalist of the band. So I know what it's like to not have to carry shit. But apparently I'm a unicorn who actually does carry stuff, a vocalist that carries equipment.
Yeah.
Would you believe that? It's not a thing. It shouldn't be a thing. My new drummer was like, I don't know how to, like, what to make of this. You're a vocalist that's actually doing something. I'm like, yep. Yeah, I pick things up occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love doing it. I'm sure you love doing it.
I do.
But I'm going to have to check out that music.
I don't as
video.
Much anymore because I don't do it as much anymore. And where I used to have, like, 3.5 octaves instantly, I now have to probably take almost an hour to warm up to get to that point.
Wow, 3.5 octaves? That's amazing.
Yeah, well, I used to, you know, I got dubbed to sing in church choirs because I could fill in for anybody who didn't show up.
You're like, all right, we need a baritone tonight. Yeah. Michael, you can handle this, right?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
But cool. Yeah, when I was a dirty hippie, one of the hippie chicks, or witch bitches, as we called them, her mother was the choir director at the North Island Naval Air Station Choir, and she talked me into that. I did take singing lessons for a little while, but I literally spent the bus money to get to and from the lessons on comic books.
That's the way to spend your money, by the way.
It is, you know, until I get caught, because finally they had to admit that I wasn't showing up because they weren't telling her. They were sending her, you know, she was paying for it.
You know, I heard something interesting recently, and let me know what you think of this, because I thought it was pretty smart, that going and doing, like, singing lessons, like, it's great and all, right? But if you don't do singing lessons, you kind of develop your own style. Whereas if you do singing lessons, you're kind of overthinking, like, you're learning and trying to control your voice a certain way. So you're not really developing your own sound. What do you think about that?
I think that's crap or bullshit.
bullshit.
No, it's like learning to play the piano. You've got to learn the scale first before you can fuck around with them.
Yeah, you can't just, like, hop on it and just be like, yeah, okay, I'll just start playing Moonlight Sonata.
My father played by ear. I mean, he'd hear a song and he'd go to a piano and play it.
My grandmother's the same way. She can transpose, like, anything. It's wild.
I have trouble with chopsticks.
I have trouble just sitting there and being like, I don't know what to do. It's too overwhelming.
I don't really care.
I wish I could play piano.
I had, at one point, I got really stupid and bought a Hammond D3 organ and 4 Leslie speakers with those vibrato things that spin around at the bottom. And I had a hole in the desert that I lived in, a trailer next to it. And I put the organ down there and I put the speakers on the top and I would take acid and just make noise. And one time I looked up and I'm surrounded by howling coyotes.
Okay, that is one. Is that an acid trip or that actually happened?
I'm not. That's, well, I got rid of the organ right after that.
You were like,
never again.
Never again. I don't need these spirit animals. Multiple spirit animals.
Here. No, the organ went to Montana, and it was part of the Dirty Shave Saloon that burnt down, and the organ went with it. But everything in Montana burns down.
Why?
Well, because it's...
People just starting fires over there for shits and giggles?
You're literally in the wilderness. I got discouraged with the place when they got telephones. They had a party line telephone where you can listen to all your neighbors and having their conversations. And now they have...
God, I haven't heard that since high school.
All that stuff. And it's quite civilized. They paved the road.
Oh, wow. Cars can drive now. Well, you could drive over dirt roads and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it had a covered bridge, but it was a dirt road to and from the covered bridge. I think it's on 17-mile drive in northern Montana, just east of the panhandle of Idaho.
Oh, nice. I bet that looks amazing. I've always loved kind of that scenery. So, Corey, you've got some questions, though. So I know you're really excited here to ask these questions. So go for it.
Yeah, so I remember seeing the initial trailer for this movie back in 2016 and being super excited to watch it. I rented it on VOD, whatever streaming service it was on back in the day. I showed it to so many people, telling them it was literally going to change their lives. To this day, I can quote it by heart, and I'm still showing it to people. Did you think, while filming The Greasy Strangler, that this would be a movie talked about almost 10 years later and develop a cult following?
No, I didn't, actually. I was just really thankful that I had finally gotten a job and that didn't get me killed. And then they had that firing squad scene. It really pissed me off.
At the end, fucking Ricky Prickles.
As a subliminal actor in Hollywood. And there's an episode of X-Files where I'm every dead body in it. Because I used to do a lot of second and third unit work with them when they came back from Canada.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's...
Okay, there's stuff I'm missing.
On Halloween night, I'm being chased by some flying monster-type character who gets me and kills me through a cornfield, which was just outside the soundstage. And then I was buried in blood for another scene there. They were great people to work for.
Oh, I'm sure. I love that show. It's a classic show at this point.
I love working in film and television. I did theater, a little bit of theater. I wasn't so good at it. The last thing I did was a Bertolt Brecht piece called Visions of Simone at Fort Mason in San Francisco. And I play three characters, but I do it so well that you don't distinguish between these three characters. You think that this French sergeant who I started as becomes a deserter because I played a refugee, and then becomes a traitor because I became a Nazi soldier after that. But that was the last play I've done, actually.
I haven't done a play since I was a kid. Corey, did you do any plays when you were a kid?
I mean, probably ones that I was forced to do while I was in school, but I never did them on my own free will. It was just never my thing.
I could imagine you doing a play.
No.
I think it'd be hysterical.
No, that's the only thing that got hysterical. English in high school and what little college I did do was theater.
So I wasn't nearly a theater guy. I was definitely a writing guy, that's for sure. I was always writing short stories and poems and things like that. And I remember one time I wrote a short story and these people came out and acted the story out in front of the school. I was like, nah, that's kind of cool. You know, that my story got picked and they just made a whole production out of it.
Really? That's great.
Yeah.
Write something for
always
me.
I've been writing. Okay. All right. Give me some time. Corey, we've been talking about this, me writing a script.
Yeah, we manifest stuff every week that we want to see in movies and films, so maybe we can start putting things to paper and give it to Michael.
I love this idea.
I do, too.
Let's make this
keep
happen.
Keep me working, damn it.
All right.
You don't want to see me living on the streets. I do that very badly.
Yeah, no, we don't
me
want
either.
That. No, what we'll do is we'll get a script going, we'll find some backers, we'll get you paid, we'll make a movie, and we'll be good to go.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
And I enjoy it. I mean, you know, but, I feel more alive on a set. than I do anywhere else anymore because I get to be whatever it is I am.
Holy shit. You know, I said the same thing while I was on stage the other day because I haven't been on the stage in almost 2 years. There was a whole slew of things that just didn't allow us to perform. Like, we lost the drummer and all these things. It's a mess. But we came back. I was on stage. I didn't have to do a whole little shtick to get people to, like, to yell louder, things like that. They were just excited to see us. And I said on stage, I love this. I don't have to do a shtick. I can just be.
Uh-huh.
And just be in the moment, enjoy it. It's where I feel most authentic. So I get it. I mean, you basically said the same thing, is that you feel like basically more yourself being on set. And that's what I'm assuming.
Well, you
right?
are, because you're letting go. Right? It's like Michael Caine said once, just let go of your face and have a thought in your head. And I used to love working on sitcoms. I know Newhart was one of my favorites because he did the warm-up himself. So you get a 20-minute performance of Bob Newhart before the show starts. And I would have done it just for that, because I, ever since I first heard Bob Newhart, I've been enthralled.
Bob Newhart's great. He is he's a legend, an absolute legend. I couldn't even imagine just being like on a sitcom and then you're just watching him doing his whole little shtick just to warm up, like just for shits and giggles. He's just riffing, you know, doing his thing.
Nothing to do with the show. He just ad-libbed a few before a show.
Yeah, that's a pro right there. Someone who can just on the fly, like just do his comedy before he even gets started on stage. It's like a warm-up, you know, because
usually they hire local comedians to come in and do the warm-up. And but he did it himself. I guess he liked that. I think he was a bookkeeper before he became a comedian. And I remember the Button Down Mind of Bob Newhart. It was a comedy album, because they used to have comedy albums.
Yeah, I don't think they do that anymore. I think they just do Netflix stand-ups.
And I know, what's his name, Matlock. He used to do those too. He had a really good comedy album I love, where he talked about, you know, being from the hills and watching these fellas go out there, just beat the hell out of each other, tracing this ball around. And what it was football.
I was just going to say, it's probably football, right? I mean, otherwise it's rugby, but I think that would be too much of a stretch in a comedy show to make rugby jokes.
He yelled at me.
Why?
Well, he collects antique cars and trucks, and none of the Teamsters knew how to start this old Ford truck, and I did. So I went in and started it for them, and he saw me in there. And said, what the hell are you doing in my truck?
You're like, I'm just trying to get it started.
Yeah, really.
Jeez.
I never worked on his show again.
Because he tried starting his truck.
He's toast.
Oh, jeez. You know, probably for the best.
Oh, that's happened to me a lot.
What, getting kicked off shows?
Yeah.
Or like just, not kicked off
of
shows,
anything.
But, well.
I have a great talent for shooting myself in the foot.
I know that all too well. Yeah. So, yeah, I've got a question for you, because this kind of has to go back to like acting and like just being, basically. So the wardrobe, or lack thereof, is pretty unforgettable in Greasy Strangler. How did you mentally prepare to film such revealing scenes in this movie?
You don't mentally prepare, you just do it. You know, you're there as a full director.
Just do it.
The director's king, you know, and it's good to be king, but he, you know, I went in for one table read, and we had it, and I went into the wardrobe thing for, you know, getting the wardrobe ready. I really like the suit, the gray striped suit, and I have a copy of the Greasy Tour suit, the big one, that Sky made me. He paid somebody to make them for us. And I tried to, I did track down the, because I didn't really want to wear that. I wanted to wear the gray and black striped one. And I tracked it down, but unfortunately it was stored in a suitcase and got moldy. And they couldn't find the material anymore, because I think they were on a very tight budget also. And they used the last of the material that they could find to make that suit.
Oh, geez. Yeah. As I was watching The Greasy Strangler, I was like, this is like the weirdest outfit to wear on a disco tour. I just thought it was so funny, like all pink, sequins, all that. It was Braden, right? Braden? Corey, correct me if I'm wrong. Thank you. and Brayden wearing it too. I'm just like, this is wild. This is a wild scene.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. I think the only note I gave him on Wardle was they wanted me to dance, and I said, well, I have to have leather soled shoes so that I can dance, because everything they make today, you can't move your feet to. And I'm from the Twist and Mashed Potato set and big band music and junk like that. And although I was part owner of a punk club in San Diego in the late 70s, I did very little dancing there.
Yeah, no, that's moshing. Yeah. I know that all too
well. I mean, we got away with not having a dance license, because we didn't, because it wasn't considered a dance until some idiot put a diagram of the steps to the pogo, and you see 2 feet on the ground, then you see a blank page, then you see 2 feet up the ground, then a blank page.
Oh, my God.
And suddenly, we're dancing, so the cops have another reason to hassle us.
Okay, I got to take a step back here. A dance license?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a thing?
You got to have licenses for everything in this country.
Oh, my God.
We're way down the list of countries with real freedom.
Yeah, I guess you can't be dancing unless you pay for it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, dancing these days is not really dancing anymore. It's just, I don't know, dry humping?
You know, I took ballet instead of PE in high school because my mother was afraid I'd get hurt playing football. She didn't think about the guys who were playing football who would come and beat the shit out of me for being the pansy who's fucking taking ballet class instead of playing football.
And
so I learned to outrun anybody, which was great because I did set some school records in track.
Wait, from ballet? I mean, you're probably like really good on your feet, so it probably like carries over skill-wise.
And, everything you do in life has consequences.
I'm a firm believer in that sometimes you make just one little decision and it alters the trajectory of your life. I mean, I've had like these one little things, like here's a for example, and I'm not trying to like talk too much about band stuff and all that, but I was going to college and it was like 45 minutes away from me. I actually ended up having a seizure, and when you have a seizure, you can't drive for 6 months. So I couldn't get there at all, like other than maybe bothering my grandfather for a ride, which I can't be doing that every single day, having him drive 45 minutes to drop me off, 45 minutes like back and all that, right? It's just too much. So I ended up going to college closer to home, and because of that, I bumped into the kid that I was going to end up being in a band with. So if I didn't have a seizure, I wouldn't be in the band I'm in today. And I just look at life like that. You have to kind of just roll with it. And like, I don't want to say there's a plan or anything like that, but it's wild. The littlest things can just set you on a whole different path.
Well, if you really want something in life, even if you don't take a direct path, you'll end up there. I've discovered that. I mean, I ricocheted around a lot to get where I am now, which was after the Greasy Strangler. Within a year of that, I no longer needed a day job because my entire career, I had a day job.
Really? So like the Greasy Strangler just kind of helped jumpstart that career for you. That's great.
I have trying to master videotaping my own auditions and submitting them, but I haven't been able to do that yet either because I'm technically challenged, which is...
I mean, I don't know. We got you here right now, and it was pretty seamless.
Well, it's easy now. But I used to have a job where I got out of the Army. I used to convert analog circuits to digital circuits for Texas Instruments. And that was a really easy job. But in fact, I got fired because prior to that, I'd gone to the IBM typewriter time clock repair school, and I had keys to time clocks that I took with me when I left. And I would punch myself in and out because they'd give me a list of things they wanted done that week. And I would get done in 2 or 3 days. And I couldn't see just coming in and hanging out in that Germanian room where you're being gamma rayed to death with lights, when I didn't need to be. They got what they asked for. And I just did my time clock or my time card and turned it in every week.
You know, it should be like that, where you'd go in, you get the job done, and then you go about your day. Like, you don't need to be there 40 hours a week or more and just maybe dick around until something comes up.
Well, that was the thing. Nothing would have come up because I did that at first. I was there for, I don't know, almost a year before they called on. And
good for you. A year. A year. Wow. Yeah, I don't think I could get away with that at my day job.
No way.
I think they would pick up on that. No way.
Yeah, I'd get caught within minutes.
Yeah. 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 By the end of the week, they'd be like, Steve, something's up with your numbers this week. What's going on? And I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. But they watch me like a hawk. I mean, that's how it is these days. Everyone's like under the microscope because they have all these metrics, all these reports and everything. You can't like just slack off anymore.
You know, now, like, I remember looking at Google Chrome and finding myself on my street walking away from my post, my mailbox. I found myself sitting in a cafe having a cup of tea. I found myself driving up and down different streets in town when they were doing the street map thing. I found myself sitting in cafes in San Francisco.
Wow. So, like, there's multiple appearances of you on Google.
There were, you know. Or Google Earth.
That'd be funny if there still were. I mean, that'd be a fun game for our audience to play. You know, find Michael St. Michael's on Google Maps. Like, hopefully they don't find you too well because we don't want people to know you.
I don't care. Okay. I mean, I was a subliminal actor most of my life. So, you know, because I did extra work primarily to support myself. Between being an extra and a stand-in, that gives me a pension for the Screen Actors Guild. Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that. Yeah, I mean, Screen Actors Guild is it's a union, so that makes sense. I just never knew that you get, like, pension and things like that. That's just it's a wild concept to me. You get to do something you love like that, and you just set up for success.
Yeah, and I got to, you know, and like, work with very creative people. I mean, like, I think Sean Connery's last film, I was his photo double and stand-in, and the only difference between us at that time was that his shoulders were a half inch wider than mine, and I had more hair than he.
Wait, his last movie, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
No. It was a thing, I don't know what it came out at. It was called Dancing About Architecture, and it had a really big cast. I got to be Jillian, what's-her-name, from X-Files, and Madeline Stowe, and Angelina Jolie, you know, a bunch of people. And Sean Connery is the type of person who, he only comes out when the camera's rolling, and you tell him where they blocked you, and he takes it from there.
That guy's a pro.
Yeah.
I mean, rest in power, Sean Connery.
To get to work with him. I mean, it was one of the best gigs I ever had, really.
I mean, to work with Sean Connery, absolutely. You know, the guy's an icon.
Yeah, I know. I remember the first time I saw him, I went to see a Jerry Lewis movie, and the other one, it was a double feature, and Dr. No was the other one. And I remember Dr. No, but I have no clue what that Jerry Lewis picture was.
Yeah, that's all right. You got to see Dr. No, and Sean Connery is nearby. I was actually just watching Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade recently, and he's amazing in that, too.
He is. I really like the one he did. It was called The Hill. That died everywhere, but I liked it.
My favorite was The Rock.
Oh, The Rock. Oh,
yeah.
That's a good one, too. Yeah, The Hill came out in 1965.
No, but in The Hill, which was done before that, and it was the first non-James Bond movie he ever made. He was in the stockade in the army.
Oh, yeah. I'm reading it right now. In a North African military prison during World War II, five new prisoners struggled to survive in the face of brutal punishment and sadistic guards. And it's in black and white, it looks like. Yeah, that was 1965. Okay, yeah. That was quite some time ago.
The least known movie.
It probably is. I've never heard of it until you just told me. So I'll have to look it up and check that out. I do enjoy watching the classics sometimes. Oh, yeah, look at that. Young Sean Connery there. Jeez. So, Corey, I think you have a few more questions.
Yeah, so is there a particular scene that was especially fun or especially gross to shoot in The Greasy Strangler?
Well, fun would be Jody.
Okay.
I didn't know I was Jody until the night before. I hadn't even looked at it. You know, I was just finding Henry Jordan or whoever. Anyway, and every scene, every take, something fell off. The teeth fell out, the fingernails fell off, the mustache fell off, and they couldn't keep them on. You know, I was surprised that there was anything left of that to be in the movie.
You know, they should have left it in. Like, if the mustache was falling off, just let it happen.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been a nice touch if they left those in. It kind of would have added to the charm of the movie.
Well, I think the fact that I had to go outside and change clothes in the middle of a busy street, come back and see me.
And actually, you didn't do that like in the movie itself. I remember that, but there was so much scantily clad bodies in this movie.
They didn't want to spend anything they couldn't, or they didn't have to. I know we're halfway through before I even had a trailer room, and then half the time I couldn't go into it. I'm in the greasy outfit, and they built a tent around me because of kids walking by.
They don't want the kids seeing that naturally.
No, but it was disturbing.
You were naked and covered in grease.
And one of my favorite scenes was when we were in the forest, and I'm waking up after being buried in leaves and stuff. And I knew that was the end of the greasy suit, because that thing, it did not take me sleeping in it well.
I would assume not. That thing, it looked extremely heavy and just very liquidy. And just, it looked like you just had stuff over you.
And it was slime.
So that was a suit you had to wear?
And then they had to do my face and my hair and this stuff. I'd come home and I'd fill up the bathtub and stick my head in the water. It took about 45 minutes to get that stuff to loosen up enough to get it out of my hair.
Oh, geez. What was it, by the way? You know?
Ultra ice. Yeah.
Ultra ice?
This stuff will give you frostbite in the Sahara in the hottest day of summer. It is just pure menthol.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Look at this. A unique sculptural gel that stimulates the look of ice. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Non-toxic water-based, but it looks like it a nightmare to wear.
And then they had the stuff that just sort of slimed over it. That wasn't so bad.
My God, that wasn't so bad. Well, that's good, at least. I mean, but yeah, you were covered in that stuff. It almost could have looked like Vaseline, too. So be grateful it wasn't Vaseline. That would just be a nightmare to get off, especially if you're covered in it.
Yeah.
Yikes.
But your skin would be so soft.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Well, that would be the benefit of wearing Vaseline all the time, is that you come home.
I had
like,
a party, and I had 1.5 kegs of beer left. And they weren't going to give me a refund on anything. So I just dumped it all in the bathtub and took a bath.
Took a beer bath?
Yeah, my skin just, smelled or felt really velvety.
Hydrated.
And, but everybody, but I smelled like used piss.
Corey, you're messing up. You've got all this beer when you could be taking a beer bath. What are you doing?
I'm going to try this. Now that I know it works out, I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
Hey, and if you smell like piss, at least you have a story.
Schlitz malt liquor.
Schlitz malt liquor. Oh, my God.
Did you get a hangover?
No, I don't know. Now, the only thing I drink is vintage bottles of Louis Roeder Cristal.
Oh.
I had to quit drinking when I started getting sick before I got drunk.
Oh, geez. Sorry to hear that. Yeah, that's unfortunate. But I mean, get a drink.
I get really drunk really fast and I don't have a hangover.
Really?
Yeah, well.
I feel like that's convenient.
The tiny bubbles, they, just get into your bloodstream so fast that you're high as a kite in no time.
That makes sense.
It's hard to overconsume. I'm not saying you can't.
That makes sense.
But I never did.
I went to a beer fest recently and, talk about consumption. Like, that stuff fills you up. So it's nice to get drunk off of very little as opposed to drinking like tons of different vendors and then hating life the next day.
Yeah.
I was so damn full. I was so full.
Now all I need to do is get a job where I can afford to spend a grand or two on a bottle of wine.
All right. Just to say you did. But you could always go to like a nice fancy steakhouse and just get a glass of it. And it would be substantially cheaper.
Yeah.
Probably $50 a glass or something, but hey, you don't have to drop $1,000. But I'm going to be writing that script, and we'll both make some money, and then we can go out and we can spend $1,000 on wine.
All right. I'm expecting that lap party.
I like this idea. We'll just get a few.
I think we'll do it, though.
No, that's fine. Corey, you've got one about this scene, bullshit artist, because I want to hear all about this. Because the way you say bullshit, it's just this like an exclamation point on it.
So what are your thoughts on the bullshit artist scene between Ewan and Braden being considered one of the greatest arguments in film history?
I'm amazed to hear that. Bullshit.
Horseshit. Bullshit.
Cat shit. Dog shit. Penguin shit. King penguin.
Oh my God.
Shit. Oh my God. My life is made now.
Corey's happy.
Well, one of my good friends actually has plans to get your portrait tattooed on with that on it.
I've seen it. There's a guy.
You've seen someone with tattoos?
I've seen four tattoos from the Greasy Strangler that are showing up, but I haven't been able to preserve them and put them on my fan page, which bums me out because I'm technically challenged. But there's this one where there's a hot dog with me on one side of the hot dog and the greasy character on the other side of the hot dog with a fork in the middle of us. And there's another one, Maniac Greasy Strangler. And I don't remember what the other couple ones I saw were, but and there's a page of merchandise from Greasy Strangler that has nothing to do with anybody who had anything to do with the movie. And I'm really bummed because they sent me this one of a guy in a hot rod, the Greasy Strangler, driving a rat rod. And unfortunately, I traded it for duck eggs.
Oh, you love your duck eggs.
Well, I got 2 dozen duck eggs for it, for a free t-shirt. Yeah.
It's not a bad gig.
Yeah, I thought so.
I mean, that's...
No, but I found this page and like, oh, wow. And I tried to order another one, but it wouldn't let me.
Probably sold out, I'm assuming.
Well, I think they just print them to order. I know SkyTel sells t-shirts and he sells. And I'm going to be selling t-shirts again if they ever show up. Did sell a couple hundred of them at different companies.
Oh, I'm sure Corey will be all over that.
I need that, and I need that, the Greasy Strangler score, the vinyl. It's a grail of mine that I'll probably never get unless I spend
$200. $200, huh?
Yeah. I was just looking at it today because I knew we were going to be chatting tonight, and I'm like, I wonder what this thing is at right now. And I saw them on eBay for like $200.
They've got to be somewhere. I mean, because I sign 2 or 3 of them every show I go to.
Yeah. I don't know if the people that you sign those for are keeping them or selling them. I don't know.
You should get a hold of the guy who wrote the music. What's his name? He's part of a British punk group called Fuck Button.
Fuck Button?
Yeah. I can't remember his name. That's he's the guy who did the music for the soundtrack. Write to him.
Andrew Hung?
Yeah, Andrew Hung.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just looking that up. Andrew Hung.
I love him.
And it's you on the cover.
I was also
of course.
Jody in the Greasy Strangler. He thought it was another act.
That needs to be an alternate cover. You as Jody.
Mondo Records is the one that pressed the vinyl, and I think they're the only ones that have ever done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $290 right now. Jeez. For the pink splatter vinyl.
Really?
Yeah, that's...
Right to Andrew.
You know what?
Tell him.
Okay.
There's an audience for it, obviously. I mean, I had like a Terrifier 2 vinyl recently and sold that thing for like $200. So people want these things, especially if there's like limited edition. But and I think we need to start getting you wrapped up so you can go to your next interview here. And Corey, yeah, have you got like one more question?
Yeah, I've got one more. With the original length of the film being 2 hours and 15 minutes, was there anything that was cut from it that you wished was released on the DVDs?
I don't think so. I know there were scenes we couldn't shoot. Like there's a scene where I punch him in the face at that motel and he collapses. And there was a scene where I pour a can of Coke into his face and start drinking it out of his face. That never got caught.
Oh,
wow.
That would have been fun.
I was really bummed because I worked on that all night. That just seemed like such a fun thing to do.
that would have seemed like a Greasy Strangler thing to do, and that
ran out of night. And there were a few scenes that we never shot. I'm hoping, because I hear Aunt Timpson is making another Greasy Strangler, that they include those.
Ooh.
Or something else in it. Sky was really upset. They're not using us in it. Okay, look.
Yeah.
Wait, so the sequel's not going to have the two of you?
No. if there's a sequel or they're just making the whole thing over again. I don't.
Oh, like a reboot?
I don't think they can do a reboot. They can't make a Greasy Strangler without you. You're like,
well, originally they
when people want, think Greasy Strangler, they think you.
Originally, they wanted somebody like Nicolas Cage.
No kidding.
That's what
I couldn't even imagine Nicolas Cage doing. But he started doing a lot of indie horror stuff.
He does, you know, and he's really good. But I mean, anybody who plays it will make it their own. Either that or it won't work.
I mean, and you for sure made this character your own. We thought you did an amazing job. Corey is over the moon right now having you on the podcast. He's been like dying to get you on the podcast. Corey can die happy now.
Oh,
I think.
Well, but, yeah, I'm wrapping
Corey,
it up.
Stick,
I'm tired.
No, stick around. Like, we have some more episodes to do.
I mean, I need all the fans I can get. And if you die, that's one less. And I can't afford.
Yeah, Corey, stick around, huh? There
you
go.
Die, I'll fucking kill you.
I mean, that'll be an honor, honestly.
Oh, okay. Well, to show up, I'm glad.
Yeah, just fucking choke me out. Treat me like the hot dog vendor.
Oh my God. I love how everyone died in it, just died so slow. They're like, oh no, I'm dying.
Yeah. Oinkers, he was my favorite kill.
Oh man, like, that one gets me every time when you pull his nose off and you stick your finger in the hole.
Oh my God. Oh, and you eat it. Just like, oh, I don't know. I was like, ugh.
It was strawberry jam.
Was it strawberry jam?
Yep.
I didn't even know that. That makes sense. You can't be having weird friggin' oil and stuff like that that can't be ingesting. But strawberry jam, that's way better.
The grease was tapioca and something or other.
Oh, well, that's better tasting than straight up extra virgin olive oil you're making in your bedroom. But, Michael, it was so awesome speaking with you today. We want to respect your time because we know you have to head off to that other interview. But thank you so much for being a part of this podcast here. Thank you so much for being involved in the Greasy Strangler, because I'm going to remember it for the rest of my life after watching it. That's for sure. And we want the fans that listen to 30 Screams or Less to know all about this movie. And I think this will help that.
Go look at the Once in Future Smash. Another was a really good short film, but they made a big, it was called Mark of the Witch. And it was a good short, but then they made a full-length thing out of it, and that kind of diluted it too much. I think they took it in the wrong direction. And then there's Shitstorm. I recommend that. And Once in Future Smash, Cult of Blood, and soon to be released, I hope, Strange Toys.
Strange Toys. I'm looking forward to what you have coming up, and I got to check out some of these other movies as well, because I mean, I watched TV of the Dead and I watched Greasy Strangler, but I haven't dove into like your full catalog. So I'm going to have to put in some.
And The Fawn.
Put in some work.
If they ever finish The Fawn, it's going to be an epic.
Oh, really? Yeah, I see, like, yeah, look at that. Strange Toys got a whole bunch here. So yeah, looking forward to all that. Michael, thank you again so much for sticking with us.
Having me.
This has been, yeah, no problem. This has been a great time. We'd love speaking with you. We would, like, if you're ever in the New Hampshire area, definitely feel free to hit us up. We'll buy you some, what was the drink again?
Louis Roeder Cristal.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll be sure to get you some Cristal when you're here.
Yeah, Cristal's on us when you're in New England next time if you're out here.
Careful.
Thank you, Michael.
I'm going to have a good time.
I got a credit card. I can be there tomorrow.
Oh God. Don't tempt us with a good time.
Hey.
So all right, Michael. Me. Thank you so much again.
Thank you for liking the movie. And thank you for appreciating Jim Hosking and Toby Harbin's work, because they are the ones that made it happen.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I would love to get them on the podcast too someday and just talk to them about the whole Greasy Strangler. But yeah. This was awesome. Thank you so much again.
It is amazing. I did that. I did, I was supposed to be on Beverly Left Lynn, but I didn't make it. And, but I did do 3 episodes of Tropical Cocktail, which I didn't pick up for a second season. So,
that's a bummer.
But, check out Tropical Cocktails. And you guys be good or don't get caught.
No problem.
No problem there.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
No problem. Have a good one.
Have a few. One's never enough.
All right, everyone, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on all podcast platforms so we can get some more exposure. Of course, tell your friends. Both our intro and outro music are courtesy of Andrew Scott Bell. Be sure to check out Andrew on all major streaming platforms. And if you see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on vinyl in the wild, be sure to pick it up. We're also part of the Shining Wizards Network. Be sure to visit shiningwizardsnetwork.com. They're an awesome podcast network ranging from wrestling to heavy metal, horror, all that good stuff. So check that out. Visit 30screamsorless.com for all previous episodes and transcripts to go with those episodes. Also, check out beardoctane.com for their whole line of grooming supplies. And be sure to use the code 30screams10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And if there's anything you want us to review, send an email to 30screamsorless@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. Use hashtag 30screamsorless. And also, we have some awesome merch for sale on our website, so definitely check that out. If you go to our website, at the very top, there's a shop link. Click that link, and you'll see all sorts of shirts, hats, mugs, things like that. If you buy it, it helps going towards our hosting costs. I'm Steve.
I'm Corey.
And thanks for listening to 30 Screams or Less. And don't forget to drink your beans.